I think all of us have heroes in our lives. Growing up, we all had maybe those pretend heroes that were really special to us. Like, for me, it's Batman. You see, Batman is more relatable than Superman because I could actually be Batman once I become a multi-billionaire. Whereas Superman, you know, I'm actually from Earth, so that one's not going to work out. Now, of course, we have the heroes that are maybe more down-to-earth that we all admire, like maybe for you it was a doctor or a cowboy, or maybe it was the lawyers that you saw on TV. But of course, there's one hero in all of our lives that we all shared, and that was the hero Mom. Mom was a hero, and she helped us accomplish things that seemed impossible. She helped us get up on the monkey bars when we were just a little too short. She made us feel better when we were feeling sick. Or even for Dad, when he's feeling sick. She helped him feel better this past week. She attends the plays. She helps us get ready for the plays. This week, Cameron is getting ready to do her own poem in front of the talent show for Option School. And Mom has been practicing and practicing and trying to get the outfit just right. Mom is a hero. And of course, today is a very special day where we get to celebrate Mom as our hero. It's appropriate that we take time to remember how important moms are to us, how important she was in developing us in who we are. Even though she may not have been perfect all the time, Mom tried and she made us successful in various different ways. For some of us today, we can still call Mom today and say, "Hey, Mom, happy Mother's Day." And for some of us, we just have to think about Mom because she's gone on into the next life. But she still leaves us those fond memories about how special she was to us. For many, they might feel that being Mom is something that happened before. While, yes, you still hold the title, you don't think about it maybe as much as you would have when you're trying to wrangle the toddlers and trying to get the crying babies satisfied, or trying to tell the teenager that even though they can't go to the dance, it's not the end of the world, right? But I'll tell you, Mom still is important. Mom is still a hero. And we shouldn't think that being Mom is all finished just because the kids are no longer tax deductions, right? When the kids move out of the home, you don't stop being Mom. In fact, I would say being Mom and all the motherly things that come with it takes on maybe a different angle or different flavor, different color, however you want to look at it, but still so very important. And unfortunately, I've heard some people say, "Well, you know, I don't really have the kids in the house anymore, so I don't really do that." Or, "I've spent my time being Mom, so I don't have to do all those hard things anymore. Or I don't want to participate doing Mom things anymore." Or maybe for those that are still in the trenches, they say, "Well, when the kids move out, I won't have to worry about being this anymore." But today, I want us to look at a heroine in the Bible that shows us that being Mom doesn't finish when the kids are all grown up. Being Mom is very important, especially when the kids are all grown up. You know, it's easy to think about how important a mom is when the children would literally die if Mom wasn't there to feed them or clothe them or help them. Or when they act like they will literally die when the mom is not there to feed them or clothe them or help them. But you see, being a mom goes beyond just those tasks. And Naomi was a mother who never stopped being a mom. She never stopped helping as a mom. Now, there are a lot of people that we think of as heroes in the Bible. We think of the great kings or the men who are prophets that shared messages that changed cities or even nations. But when you think about the women heroes in the Bible, the list often feels shorter. And even on that shorter list, you think, okay, well, who are the hero mothers on that list? Now, of course, there were hero mothers, because behind every good man is a good wife. Behind every good and successful son is a good mom. So, of course, there are the unsung heroes of the Bible. But today I want us to think of a heroine, specifically Naomi in the story of Ruth, and how she was such an integral part of the success of Ruth, and how her being a mom didn't stop just when her children grew up. In fact, all the examples of her being a mom really start when her children are already grown. So I want us to think about the story of Ruth here. And so I'm going to retell the story just so it's fresh in our minds, because it will probably be faster for me to tell it than for us to just read through. But it starts when Naomi and her husband and their two sons, they leave Israel. So it seems that perhaps there was a famine and they decided to try and find success in a land that's not too far away, a land called Moab. They were from Bethlehem, although they were not Judahites themselves, but they settled down in Moab and they found some success there. In fact, as Naomi's family grew, her sons grew up, and they actually found some women to marry. There were local Moabites. Orpah and Ruth married her sons. And it seemed that everything was going well. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us what happens exactly, but it seems that in very quick succession, Naomi's husband and her two sons all die. Maybe it was an accident where they all died together. Maybe it was one after another after another. Maybe it was a disease. We don't know. But whatever the situation is, the three providers of the family have now died. And they have left no children. There's no line of inheritance that should be expected. Now, Naomi, not only is she left without a means of provision, and there's no welfare check that she can expect coming in the mail, she might even start facing social ostracism. You see, in this society, they would have been very superstitious of a woman who's not only her husband has died, but now the gods have taken her sons. What kind of curse and horrible person might be on this woman? What did she do to anger the supernatural people? And so it'd be real easy for people to start turning against Naomi. And so her situation is pretty dire. And so Naomi decides the best thing for me is to pack up and go back to Jerusalem, or to Israel, excuse me. If I go back to Israel, at least I'm going to have some relatives there. And the famine is now over. And so perhaps I can find some help there. Of course, she sits down and she says, you know, the best thing, though, is that Orpah and Ruth, you shouldn't come with me. You're young. You're Moabites. You can go find good men here in Moab. You can still be taken care of your family. I've got nothing for you. She even goes on to say that I couldn't even give you another son, right? I'm beyond childbearing at this point. So it's best if you guys go on to your family. Now, both Orpah and Ruth, they didn't like what they heard. They seemed to really care for Naomi. They loved her. They were saddened by this news. And so Naomi said, you know, you need to go back to your family, and Yahweh, the God of Israel, can bless you even here in Moab. Orpah decides that's a good idea, and so she decides to go back with her family. She's sad to leave, but she thinks Naomi's got good advice. So she leaves. But Ruth, she refuses to leave. She says, no, I'm going to stay with you. In fact, I'm going to be with you in your people, and I'm going to take on your God, and whatever happens to you, I'm going to be there with you. And so they decide to go back from Moab to Bethlehem to try and find some family that maybe can help out. And when they get there, here's Naomi introducing Ruth to, as we know, the Israelites were very welcoming of outsiders, weren't they? No, she's introducing this Moabite woman, a foreigner. But she speaks highly of her. And so Ruth actually begins to get a good reputation because of all the nice things that Naomi is saying about her daughter-in-law. Maybe we could even say her adopted daughter now, because there's no legal ties. And yet Ruth says, no, I'm going to be a part of your family. I am now joining the nation of Israel, as it were. So now they're in Bethlehem. They have to make a go of it. But what are they going to do? Well, you see, in God's law, even though this is a time of the judges, and if you've read through Judges, you realize not many people are real interested in following God's law. But in God's law, there are provisions for poor people. You're not supposed to reap or harvest the whole field. You're supposed to leave the corners of the field so in case there's someone who's poor, they can go and harvest for themselves. Or you should allow them, when something falls out of your harvest, it falls out of your bundle, you should allow them to go and pick that up. And it seems, though, even in this time when there is no king in Israel and every man does what is right in his own eyes, as the Judges author puts, there's still some who follow these rules. And so Ruth says, Naomi, let me be the provider for us. And so she goes out in the fields and she begins trying to collect the barley for them to be able to even eat. And so she's going out and eventually she finds her way to the field of a man named Boaz, who is actually a rich but distant relative of Naomi's. And Boaz not only notices that there's a poor woman who is collecting food from his field, but he asks, well, who is this woman? Oh, that's Ruth, the Moabite, Naomi's daughter. Oh, I've heard of that woman. I've heard of how faithful she was to Naomi and how she stayed here. What a good woman she is. And so he goes up and introduces himself to Ruth. And he actually makes some provisions and tells his people, I want you to make it a little bit easier for Ruth to collect this barley. Leave a little bit extra. And actually, I want you to let her take some from the gatherings that you guys have collected. And so he's making it easier for Ruth. And so Ruth, she shows up at home and Naomi's like, wow, how did you collect so much barley? Good work. This is a good investment. And Ruth goes on to tell her, well, you know, I found myself in Boaz's field, and he did this, and he was kind. And she said, that's great. That's amazing. You should keep going to Boaz's field. And so Naomi not only validates Ruth's efforts, because it was Ruth's plan to go out and collect, but she says, go ahead and be safe about it and keep doing what you're doing that's successful. If you go in and read in the book of Ruth, you see that she was staying where the other women were, so there was less danger of her being harmed or attacked. And so Naomi is celebrating Ruth's success and celebrating her good work. So as she continues collecting in the field, it comes to Naomi to have an idea that she floats in front of Ruth. She says, you know, Boaz is actually a relative of ours. We talked about that. You know, you might, I don't know, see if Boaz is interested. Put your relationship status on Facebook to available. And so she describes this plan at the beginning of Ruth chapter 3 to her daughter-in-law, to Ruth, and says, why don't you go ahead and try and entice Boaz's interest a little bit? Now, I'll be honest, in chapter 3, there's a lot of culture within this story that seems kind of odd to us about going into a tent and uncovering feet and laying next to them and waking up in the middle of the night, and I can't sit here and explain all of it, but this was the best way to say, you interested? And Naomi understood this, right? Naomi helped translate if there was any cultural differences between Ruth's Moabite bringing and the Israelite. But regardless, Naomi gave good advice. She wanted Ruth to succeed. And so Ruth goes in, and she basically asks if Boaz is interested. And sure enough, Boaz is interested. He's been interested in this noble woman. And so he goes through the process to see if he can marry Ruth. And of course, there's this legal process that goes on that Boaz was not the first one to be allowed to marry Ruth because there was actually some land associated with Naomi's family. Now, we don't know all the legalities of what happened, but regardless, that land was doing Naomi no good, right? They're beggars. They're collecting food from the field. So perhaps the rights were sold or whatever it went on, but you see, land had to stay within the family in Israel. And so Boaz, before he was allowed to try and marry Ruth, he would have to actually buy back that land and bring it back into the family of Naomi. But there was someone who was closer in relationship to Naomi who had first right to do that. It's called the right of redemption, to redeem or buy back the land into the family. And this man said, yeah, I'll buy that land back. But Boaz says, oh, and don't forget, you actually also have to marry Ruth and sire a child that is part of Naomi's son's family line. Well, you know, I don't really want to worry about that. If you want the field, go ahead and buy it. And so Boaz went ahead and did that. He bought the field, but not so he could have more land, but so that he could marry Ruth. He admired Ruth. And they, sure enough, had a child. And that child was the grandfather of the greatest king in Israel's history. Obed is the grandfather of David. Now, Naomi doesn't fade into the background here. Naomi is still an active part of Ruth's life, and she raises or helps to raise this child, her grandson. So Naomi is an example of ongoing motherhood, a mom who doesn't stop being a mom just because the children are out of the house. So as she's an example of ongoing motherhood, the first thing I want us to see is that she is an example of someone who treated her family well, and especially what I would say her extended or her in-law family well. If you have your Bibles, turn with me to the book of Ruth. We're going to be grabbing some snippets out of here that I want to show you why I believe these things to be true. In Ruth chapter 1, beginning in verse 14, Naomi has just told Orpah and Ruth that they should go off and go back to their families. And these two gals, they have this reaction. They both lift up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. What we see here is just from the way that these two women act, we see that Naomi is an honorable woman who treats her family well. Somehow, through the interactions, through the time that happens before Ruth chapter 1, where they are raising up their sons and then the sons are married, Naomi treats her daughters-in-law so well that they can't bear the idea of leaving her, even after the family connection is gone. There's no monster-in-law or evil-in-law to describe Naomi here. She treats her family well. Now, we also know that Naomi is a great example because she's an imperfect person, right? Look down at verses 20 and 21 of chapter 1. Here's Naomi, and she's kind of falling into some gloom here. Naomi says to them, "Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara," which means bitterness, "for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me?" Her name means pleasant. And she says, but don't call me pleasant. Call me bitter. Life is bitter. My circumstances are bitter. Now, she's pretty down. And she doesn't know why these things have happened. She's lost her husband. She's lost her sons. She's not a perfect person and, you know, having that perfect joy going, oh, don't worry about it, nothing's wrong. You know, God's not set against me, that's just life circumstances. She struggles. She thinks God is actually set against her. And yet, even in her imperfection, she still values God and thinks of him as the provider of the world, including her daughters-in-law. In verse 6 of chapter 1, Naomi arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard that the land of Moab, or she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. So now she attributes the success of Israel to God. And further on in verse 8, Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord," and that's Yahweh, not Dagon or some other deity, "may Yahweh deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me." So even in her despair, where she struggles to understand why life is so hard for her, she still trusts that God not only has provided for his people, but can reach across borders. And she has a very mature understanding of God compared to what many people during this time would have had, and realize that Yahweh can provide even for my daughters-in-law if they go back to their homes. Now, another example of her ongoing motherhood is that she trusted and empowered her family. Let's look at verses 7 through 13 of chapter 1 here. So Naomi departed from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her. And they went on the way to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant that you find rest, each in the household of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, but we will surely return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." It was probably in Naomi's best interests to try and hold on to those connections to Orpah and Ruth. She's an older lady with no prospects in her future. She believes God himself is set against her in some way. Who's going to help provide? Well, she could keep these two women. They've already expressed their desire to be with her. But no, she says, "No, I think what is best for you guys is to go and find husbands in Moab." So she is already self-sacrificing and thinking of her family, not what is necessarily best for her. And so she is trying to do what is best for her family. She also trusted and empowered her family. If you jump over to chapter 2 and look at the first three verses, we see that she not only trusts Ruth, but also encourages Ruth to be the provider of the family. Now, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family Elimelech, probably didn't say that right, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Please, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. So when Naomi gets to Israel, she has to kind of rely on Ruth. Well, Ruth comes up with this plan. "Let me go and do the gleaning." And so Naomi says, "Okay, I'm not only going to trust you, but I'm going to empower you and kind of direct you in the right direction." And so she's helping guide her family. Even though Ruth is a grown adult, she's still trying to give helpful guidance to her daughter. She's also constantly trying to help her family improve in life. And this is really where we kind of know the story of Ruth, what it's kind of famous for in chapter 3. In verses 1 and 2 of chapter 3, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to Ruth, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" See, she's seeking what's best for her daughter. Now is not Boaz our kinsman with those maids that you were... Excuse me, sorry. My brain's not reading words today, I'm sorry. "Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." Now, she understands an opportunity. She's explaining the opportunity, and then she's going to try and encourage Ruth to take advantage. "Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor. Do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." That's actually how Rachel and I dated. I have no idea why this is what it is. There's a lot of conjecture out there, and we're not really going down that pathway. What we do see, though, is that Naomi is trying to help improve Ruth's circumstance. Now, this isn't meddling in Ruth's life. This is saying, hey, here's an opportunity. Here's how you can make best of that opportunity. And she encourages Ruth to do it. And so she's helping with these new opportunities. But then as life progresses, as we see the relationship unfold, we read in verses in chapter 4, starting in verse 13, how now that God has blessed his family, Boaz took Ruth, she became his wife, And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed is Yahweh, who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. The neighbor women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. She's no longer seeing her circumstances as bitter, but again as pleasant. She's now going by Naomi, telling people to celebrate with her. She is taking advantage of the new opportunities in her family's life. She's not frustrated that Obed is not of her bloodline, not literally, but instead, this is her grandson through Ruth. And instead of just abandoning them, she now celebrates the success, and now she participates. She actually helps raise Obed. She doesn't have the mindset of, "Oh, I've done my time, I've raised my sons, I don't have to worry anymore." She instead looks at it as an opportunity to be a helper. So if we look at Naomi and we say, okay, how can we apply these sorts of lessons in our lives today? Now, again, we look at motherhood as, sometimes our culture looks at motherhood as something that happens between 0 and 18 years and then you're kind of done. You still get the Mother's Day card, but you're kind of done. But you notice everything that Naomi did as a mother in this story was to adult children. And so I think we can learn some things that can be encouraging for us. The first is to treat our kids, and especially our in-laws, with respect, with kindness and goodness. Not only because our children married them and they're important to our children, but think about how Naomi must have treated Ruth. And she had every reason to not even like treat Ruth well. She's a foreigner. She's not an Israelite. But she treated Orpah and Ruth so well that they couldn't bear the thought of leaving her, even though they had lost their husbands. And so as we reflect on this, we might ask, would my in-law children, would they want to stay in the family if they're no longer connected by marriage? Right? If my son or daughter, if they died, have I treated my in-laws so well that they would want to stay in the family? And if you have to say, no, probably not, is there a way that we could start improving that relationship today? Is there something that we can try and lay a foundation to improve how we treat our children and their adult spouses? We also see the idea of empowering our children. And Naomi was someone to not only encourage, but also to celebrate the victories in Ruth's life. And we think about how important that is in adult children's lives. Now, you guys have all been there, right? As adult children, you seek the adulation and encouragement from your parents. And remember how important that is to your adult children, to your adult grandchildren. Even that, you know, "I'm really proud of you for doing that." Or, "You impress me when you do these things. This about your character really impresses me." As we reflect on this, we could ask the question, do my children trust me with their hopes and their dreams? And what I mean by that is, am I someone that my kids come to and they can say, "Hey, Mom, Dad, I've thought about doing this." And they say, "Well, that's kind of cool. Well, let me tell you why that's not going to work." Boom, 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 boom. Or are we someone that they come and say, "Hey, Mom and Dad, I want to tell you this." And you say, "Okay, that's cool. Maybe that'll be great for you." Try and encourage them. Now, of course, we know there's some crazy harebrain schemes out there, right? There was about 3 months Gabe thought he was going to be a chiropractor. Well, that didn't work out. But, you know, it's that idea of being an encourager and still saying, "Okay, well, the chiropractor thing didn't work out. That's all right. Go down this pathway." You know, Naomi didn't shut Ruth down and say, no, you're not going to do well as a collector of food. Or, "Oh, you know, Boaz, he's rich, he's well-connected. You're probably not going to do well as, you know, attracting his attention." She's encouraging. Do I encourage my children? We think about success for our children. Now, in Naomi's story, she's trying to find success for the life of Ruth, trying to help her survive. And it's important that we try and help our children benefit in life, you know, just physically with success. The things that you've learned in life are valuable to them as they try and grow, how to avoid certain financial mistakes, how to invest correctly, how to get along with an employer that's kind of difficult, right? Things that you've experienced are really good in life. And we see that Naomi was helping Ruth bridge some gaps there. But there's another part that's even more important, and I want to read this familiar passage here out of 2 Timothy chapter 1. Paul writes to Timothy, he says, I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I'm sure that it is in you as well. A mom continues not only to seek the benefit of her children in life, but more importantly, to seek the benefit of her children in their spiritual walk. Are you praying for your children? Are you praying for your grandchildren? Are you haranguing them about not attending worship enough times, or are you trying to encourage them to be faithful in their walk? Are they driven closer to the Lord because of their relationship with you? Or are they driven further away from the Lord because they just can't stand the religious stuff from mom and dad? Now, it's important to encourage our children as they pursue things in this life. But as Paul said to Timothy, godliness has a benefit both in this life and in the life to come. And that's an important part of our moms. Mothers can continue to help their children. Now, a lot of times we think of young children being the only ones who really need help from mom. But that's not really true. Moms can help even with adult tasks that their children have. You know, if you have some helpful advice, perhaps that's good from time to time. But honestly, sometimes some moms just don't want to help with things going on in their kids' lives. I know some grandparents that see it as more of a burden than a benefit or a blessing to watch their grandchildren so mom and dad can get away. I know some people who don't even want to visit their grandchildren because it's just too inconvenient. I tell my family, I say, you know, it's the exact same distance from your door to my door as it is from my door to your door. And the speed limit's the same, actually, believe it or not. Sometimes we let inconvenience get in the way of helping our adult children. Sometimes some people have even said, I don't really want to help because I've already done my time. I've already raised my kids, so it's not my responsibility. And so we could ask ourselves, say, am I like Naomi, a helpful person who says, you know, oh, there's a grandson, Obed, I'm going to celebrate that, and then I can help, right? I was blessed to have my mom come down and live with us for the better part of, I think it was 2 weeks or so, after Mason was born. We lived far away from everyone. And she came to help with chores. And then my mother-in-law came down to help with chores and raising the new son. Do we view things like that? Am I an asset to my adult children? Or am I simply just meddling in their life and making life more difficult? See, Naomi was a mom who never stopped helping just because the kids were grown. Now, she wasn't a perfect person, and I don't think any mom is a perfect person. But moms are great heroes to their children. And I want to encourage us, because most of us are done with the children in our homes. And I say us loosely because I'm not, but many of you guys have been successful in that. And I eagerly anticipate that someday I can say I've been as successful as some of you. But that doesn't mean that being mom or being dad has stopped because the kids are out of the home. And so, moms, I want to celebrate Mother's Day with you and say, Happy Mother's Day. Good work on the good things you have done as moms. But don't stop yet. Be great moms to your adult children. Be great grandmothers to your growing grandchildren. because you can be a continued asset, a continued help, just as Naomi was. Let's all be standing together and seeing our